Boston fans, this is what you've been waiting for.
Thomas, in the paint, tries to spin it up and down.
It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
Into Crowder, takes it.
So what are you waiting for? Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll-free, 347-215-7771.
We're now ready! Marcus Smart at the buzzer!
Well, KG was in the house tonight. He didn't get onto the floor at all, but regardless, the Celtics give him a rude homecoming. Welcome into CLNS Radio's post-game coverage of tonight's game between the Celtics and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Tonight, the Celtics snap a three-game losing streak by a score of 113-99 over KG and the Wolves. I am your host, Sean Backe. Joining me tonight will be Rich Conti. Be sure to check out our Twitter handle exclusively for the post-game show. Be sure to follow at CLNS Celts PG Show to tweet live with the host. Get in queue when we open up the FanDuel call lines as well. That number is 347-215-7771. And don't forget that this episode is brought to you by Harrys.com. Wake up to Harrys. What is your typical morning routine? Now that we're into the winter time, officially, how is your routine changing? Talk about starting your day with Harry's, waking up to a better shave, and waking up to the realization that you're paying an arm and a leg for razor blades. For listeners to the show, Harry's is giving $5 off your first purchase of a starter set with coupon code Celtics. After entering my code Celtics at checkout, you can get a Harry's starter set for just $10. That's a month's worth of shaving for just $10 with the code Celtics at checkout. I have done this. I have made the switch to Harrys.com, and I love the shave that I get, even shaving my head. So go to Harrys.com and use the promo code Celtics to get $5 off. I'm going to bring in Rich Conti now, my co-host for the evening. Rich, the return of KG was a little uneventful as he got his typical rest night on the second night of a back-to-back here. But the Celtics down a couple of men themselves with Amir Johnson and Jared Sullinger out of this game, come up with a good victory, 113-99. Your thoughts on snapping the three-game losing streak against the Wolves tonight?
Well, I'm sure KG obviously misses Boston. This is the Boston fans, and I'm sure misses Gino, but I think if he had his choice, he wouldn't have gotten to see him. It was an interesting game, you know, after a tough week last week where the Celtics dropped three straight games. It was nice to see them bounce back, but this was kind of a little bit of an atypical win for them. They won this game more on offense than they did in their kind of customary defensive style. I think at one point in the third quarter, they were shooting almost 60% for the game. They cooled off a little bit there at the beginning of the fourth, but we didn't see a lot of that defense that we've gotten accustomed to them. But, you know, they played Minnesota, a young team, kind of still struggling, although they're doing a little bit better in the West than many folks thought they would coming into the season. And it was nice to get a W on the board tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to start with the Timberwolves first, as typically would start with the Celtics and how they did. But coming into this game, obviously, like you said, they kind of surprising some people out in the West. They were 11-16 going in. You know, obviously, with the tutelage of Kevin Garnett as his influence on the floor is not as it used to be. Obviously, it's more in that mentoring role in what, very well could be his final season. But I definitely think I see the KG effect on these guys, particularly Karl-Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. These guys played a great game for the Wolves tonight. I was very impressed with them. I was looking forward to seeing them playing together against the Celtics. And Towns, obviously, 25 points, 16 rebounds. I believe it was his 11th double-double of the season already in his rookie campaign in his 35 minutes. And Wiggins as well kind of snuck up on us with his 26 points on 8-17 shooting. Can you see the KG effect on these guys? And, I mean, obviously both of them were wildly talented going in, but, what are your thoughts on how those two guys in particular played tonight for the Timberwolves?
Yeah, Towns hasn't been shy about crediting KG with his development so far. And, you know, clearly the guy's on a fast track to NBA stardom. Looked like a complete beast down low tonight. Celtics really had no answers for him through mm-hmm. much of the game. And, you know, as I said, he hasn't been shy about crediting KG for a lot of the success he's experienced. Just, I think fans maybe overestimate some of the technical aspects of it, although certainly a guy like KG had a million and one veteran tricks that he could teach a guy. I think the impact of a guy like Kevin Garnett on young players like this is as much about the competitive aspect, you know, how to kind of come prepared, mentally prepared every night. We all in Boston grew to know and love KG's mental approach to the game. And I think he's, you know, slowly passing it on to the younger generation there in Minnesota. You know, not every guy is going to be as overtly and externally intense as KG is. And Towns,
nobody.
You know, really, yeah, and Towns really isn't that type of guy. But I think with KG, it's more, hey, you don't have to be me. You just have to, you know, come prepared the way I do and bring yourself ready to play. And just that aspect, and as well as kind of the off-the-court stuff, how to be a professional and how to, you know, make sure mm-hmm. you get your rest, how you, you know, you make sure you take practice seriously. So, yeah, I think Towns has really been really kind of forthcoming in sharing kind of all the help that KG has given him. And you saw it on the court tonight. You know, Wiggins, you know, certainly is an athletic guy. He had quite a few points in garbage time tonight. I think he had kind of a rough game overall. He's a guy when, you know, the game turns kind of up and down, can be really dangerous. But beyond that, you know, don't see a lot of skill there yet. But he's still a young guy. So, you know, they might be building something here. And I think that was part of the move mm-hmm. to bring KG over from Brooklyn when they did that last year, was, hey, let's bring this guy home. As much as we like to think in Boston he's one of ours and part of him always will be, you know, Minnesota has kind of been his NBA home for, you know, long part of his NBA career. He's still pretty much synonymous with that franchise. And so, you know, I think they saw an opportunity to bring him back to Minnesota and have him start to, you know, maybe pass on a little bit of the knowledge and a little bit of that experience that he gained over those years to this younger generation of players they're trying to build around in Minnesota.
Well, I have a lot more to talk about with Kevin Garnett, and more so than just what went on or what didn't go on with him not mm-hmm. playing in this game. But another player I was impressed with on the Minnesota side before we look at what Boston did tonight, Zach LaVine off the bench, 17 points, showed some quickness, that slashing ability. Obviously, I think everyone's seen the videos of him coming out mm-hmm. you know, around draft time of the vertical leap that he has and his dunking ability. But, you know, this is a decent piece for them off the bench to come in and bring some high intensity out there. And, you know, I was impressed with him. Hadn't really seen too much of his game on the court other than in YouTube videos and whatnot. But mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on this kid and what he could bring as a role player to the Wolves as they continue to build?
Yeah, I always tend to look for him, you know, on league pass, because he was one of those guys that, as you said, kind of came out of nowhere on the weeks or, you know, a couple of weeks leading up to the draft last year. And a lot of that was just based on his athleticism. He only played the 1 year at UCLA, missed a bit of time, was in and out of the rotation there. It was really intriguing as a big, athletic, long guy who seemed to, you know, show some aptitude for playing point guard. And so, you know, my interest in watching him play is to just kind of see if he's developing and, you know, remotely resembles an NBA game. I know he's an NBA athlete, he came back tonight, and similar to Wiggins, you know, when the game turns up and down and he can kind of get out there in space and it's very dangerous, but, you know, we all know that most of the NBA game isn't played that way. So when the game slows down, when teams are really executing their offense and defense, it's what you're doing in those moments game. And, you know, he's still not showing much, but again, a young guy, he's 20 years old, still a long way to go. Minnesota Thunder model, as they call it, to building a franchise here. And, you know, I've been a critic of that type of approach. I think it just takes a tremendous amount of luck to end up with something on the other end of that. But, you know, it's still early in the process for them. So I guess, you know, using the word process kind of brings up shades of Philadelphia, and they're certainly ahead of the curve, ahead of where Philadelphia is at this point, especially considering they've probably been at it for a season less than Sam Hinkie and his folks in Philly has, and with not much to show for it. So they're 11 and 17, I guess, now in the West, a couple games outside of a playoff berth. And, you know, well, it's a long season. I don't expect them to really be knocking on the door of the playoffs when all things are said and done. But, they're showing, if you don't take them seriously, they can do some things. And, you know, for a young team, that's really that first step in your progression is, when someone's not really looking, can you make them hurt? And, you know, the Celtics did that last year in the second half of the season, and you know Minnesota's trying to show that they can do that consistently this year. And it's going to be a long road for them, but certainly with a guy like Towns and then two pieces like Wiggins and Levine, who if nothing else are like I said NBA athletes, they're a little bit ahead of the curve.
Well, despite the good performances by those three players that I mentioned, this short 8-man rotation that Sam Mitchell went with tonight couldn't get it done. The Celtics pull off the victory 113-99. Don't forget to get in queue when we open up the FanDuel call lines 347-215-7771. And follow us on our social media pages, twitter.com/CLNSradio or at CLNS Radio, or you can go to facebook.com/CLNSFans and follow us there. Don't forget, a little bit later on, we're going to be having the Garden Report's Jared Weiss calling in with the Grandstand app Celtics locker room report. I'm hoping that maybe KG had some words of wisdom after the game. Always great for a soundbite, particularly when he was with the Celtics here, but throughout his career as well. So it'll be interesting to see if we have any words from KG after that one. 113-99 was the final score. So we did see Gino Garnett did get a pretty good kick out of that as he usually does. But sent off with rousing cheers from the Boston faithful that got him a little emotional as well. And you know it's been a couple years now. He came back with the Nets and obviously there was a great presentation for him at that point. Him and Paul Pierce, but still has some love from Boston. And like I said, Rich, I do want to get into that a little bit later. But kicking it over to what the Celtics did tonight. Like you said, shooting nearly 60% at one point, very impressive shooting night for them. And, really their offense was what led them in this game tonight. They spread the love as well as looking at the stats here. Let's see, six guys in double figures. And Thomas was right there with 8 points. Hunter had 7 points. So, you know, you have Kelly Olynyk, who had an impressive night shooting, had 19 points and 5 rebounds, 7 of 10 shooting for him to lead the scoring for the Celtics. Jay Crowder, typical night for him, 18 points. He had 10 rebounds. Avery Bradley, who was hot early, went cold for a while but hit some big shots late for 13 points for him. David Lee, you know, obviously with Amir Johnson and Jared Sullinger out tonight, Jared Sullinger back spasms, Amir Johnson plantar fasciitis kept both of those guys out tonight. But I thought Lee and obviously Zeller coming in off the bench with his 14 points and 8 rebounds really was helpful to the Celtics. Neither of them could stop Towns, but ultimately they were able to overcome his 25 points, with some nice nights of their own and a couple of block shots from those guys. So, obviously Zeller hasn't played that much, Rich, but there are spurts when he gets out there where he has nights like this, when he can get out and transition and run. He's obviously quicker than pretty much anybody that's going to be guarding him. Yep. Lee has been, we've talked about quite a bit, but he had a pretty decent night tonight too. So the Celtics do have some depth, although, these guys have struggled so much. They've struggled mightily at times. You know, can we expect this consistency out of these guys, or is this just kind of a flash in the pan because they were asked to step up in the absence of two guys that were injured?
Yeah, well, in terms of the big guys, I think coming into the game, you thought, well, you know, here's Lee's opportunity to really kind of step in and have a big game. And he struggled early on. You know, he had a big third quarter, particularly the first half of the third quarter, when the Celtics kind of pushed the lead up there. They broke the game open with an 18-4 run over the second half of the first quarter of the third quarter. And, you know, really a big part of that run, particularly early on, was Lee as well as Jay Crowder. And, you know, he seems to struggle against athletic big guys along the baseline. You know, we saw early in the season he had some struggles with Nerlens Noel and Jahlil Okafor in Philadelphia. But it was nice to see him kind of get on track a little bit there. He had, 11 points in the third quarter and I think 5 or 6 rebounds as well. So, he kind of turned around his game a little bit. And Zeller's actually had a couple of games in a row where he's, kind of gotten his has worked his way out of the doghouse, it seems. You know, he hadn't seen much court time at all until the Detroit game last week. And, even though the Celtics lost, I thought Zeller was one of the better players in that game. And, kind of came back tonight and had another solid game with 14 points. And, he's such a skilled offensive player that, as long as, when the offense is functioning well and the ball is moving, because he's on the basket, I think where he really struggles is when the offense kind of goes too much of the hero ball by Isaiah Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
The ball doesn't find him, Zeller, for long stretches, and he starts to become more of a liability out there, particularly defensively and on the boards. But if the ball is moving and he's working his way along the baseline or getting up and beating the other big guy to position down the court, he can finish with either hand and he can put up some numbers. So I wasn't totally surprised to see his game tonight. And you mentioned Olenek, he had a very good game. He's been kind of hesitant shooting the ball and I think been very inconsistent because of it. But tonight he had a great game shooting 7 of 10 and 3 of 3 from behind the arc. So it was nice to see him get untracked a little bit. But to me, the guy who's been the most consistent player night in, night out, particularly over the last month, has been Jay Crowder. Matt Rury and I were talking about this after the Pistons game. Especially with Smart out, Crowder's kind of become the team's leader. When they're playing well, they kind of reflect his identity. And, he had another solid game tonight and was right there with Lee in the third quarter, helping to break the game open with a couple of big shots and some tough rebounds. And in addition to the 18 points, he finished with 10 boards. So that was, another solid night for him on the glass.
I really love his game. He doesn't jump off the page as a superstar. And obviously when the trade went down with the Dallas Mavericks for Rajon Rondo, I think a lot of us were saying, who the hell is this Jay Crowder guy? We found out very quickly who he was and what he was all about. And he's kind of taken on that KG role. He's a leader on the floor. He's very vocal. He wants to be the guy that's taking charges and that rah-rah kind of leader out there. But he's got the game to back it up. Mm-hmm. There's been he's had his struggles as well, as everyone does. A night like tonight where he was hitting a shot on the outside and he's got a sneaky good outside shot and particularly behind the arc. But he's going to punch in and be that blue collar guy that's going to go out there and get the rebounds, go diving for the ball. He's going to find open men in transition or to kick it out. And he's not afraid to penetrate and go to the hoop as well and get to the line. So I really like his game. And I couldn't agree with you more there, Rich. He's really, especially tonight was certainly a standout in this one and in helping the Celtics get this 113-99 victory over the Wolves. You mentioned Isaiah Thomas and obviously, sometimes he gets into the hero ball, as you mentioned. No hero ball really out of him tonight.
Yeah.
That was a struggle for him. 3 of 9 shooting, only 8 points. He's been consistently good for 20, around 20 points a game. He did play 35 minutes. I will say this, he contributed 7 rebounds and 12 assists. So yep. Even though his shot wasn't going, he was certainly helping in other areas. But just a night where, a little bit off for Isaiah Thomas when it comes to his outside shot.
Yeah, I thought tonight was one of his best games in a while. You know, he was looking to move the ball, looking to penetrate, mm-hmm. find open shooters, and he needs to do that. I mean, you know, he's got that. He's got a certain set of skills in terms of being able to, in clutch moments of the game, get his shot off in situations where you think maybe he can't. But you know, he's almost better, playing that game as more of a change of pace and playing off of his natural point guard skills, because I think the steady dose of him looking for his offense, ends up catching up with him. First of all, obviously physically takes a lot out of a guy like him to be, relentlessly attacking the basket at his size. But the other issue is, when the defense keyed on him, he is 5'9", right? I mean, mm-hmm. we saw it in the playoffs last year against Cleveland. When a defense is prepared and disciplined and executing well, they can take him out of the game. And so, I think he's, his ceiling is when he uses his scoring ability as kind of a change of pace to kind of, use it at key moments of the game or use it to keep the opponents off balance, but really focus trying to play a little bit more the traditional point guard as he did tonight. I think the issue is the Celtics don't have that go-to scorer to really complement him. And so, in situations where the offense bogs down, I think that, kind of escalates things, and I think he kind of feels the need to kind of maybe take it a little bit more on his shoulders, even if it is, he isn't going to be the most efficient guy in doing that. But he had a great game tonight. You mentioned the 12 assists, the 7 rebounds. The shooting I didn't think was that bad because he didn't force it. The three for nines aren't as bad. It's when the 3 for 9s turned into 4 of 16, 4 of 18. those are the games that get ugly. But talking about the need for a go-to scorer and kind of looping back to Crowder for a second, one of the things I think is interesting reading some of the tea leaves and some of the comments Ainge just made lately, the December 15th date passed when teams can start to think about trading guys they signed in the offseason. And, some of the comments for Ainge about, of course we'll look to be opportunistic, to make a move. Ideally, we'd like to add a go-to scorer. And, I don't think that was surprising to anybody. And I think a lot of folks mm-hmm. kind of assumed that they'd be looking for a wing player or, a small forward to bring in to play that role. But I'm almost beginning to wonder if, Ainge sees Crowder as more than maybe some of the fans do, as kind of a glorified role player and really thinks of him as more of a core, starting rotation type of player. Because it was interesting, Ainge said, preferably the go-to scorer would be a big guy. They would be able to bring in a big guy to be that go-to scorer and not a three. So I think he envisions Crowder is a key part of the future going forward. He's signed to a reasonable deal. He's shown he's the type of player that can, play in the situation, in those really competitive situations. And he's not one of these, guys who's just kind of running up numbers in a non-competitive situation. So, I'm almost, curious as to how Ainge kind of envisions him fitting on this team as it continues to grow and develop. And, if he doesn't see him as a starter in the long run, despite maybe what some fans think.
Yeah, there's certainly some rumors flying around, and we can certainly get into those as well. CLNS Radio, though, and the CLNS Beat podcast series in Audible are giving you a free audio book from the world's largest online library. Audible.com is a leading provider of audio books with more than 180,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, my personal favorite, sports, and periodicals. Simply go to audiblepodcast.com/Celtics to claim your free audio book today. One other performance tonight that I did want to mention, Rich, really quickly off the bench tonight was Jonas Jerebko. He's, obviously hasn't gotten the type of minutes that he had maybe in the second half of last season when he came over to Boston, and, nor has he had the impact as much as he did last year. But tonight I thought was a great performance from Jonas. He was early in off the bench with the injuries and finished the night with 12.7 rebounds and 3 assists on 4-7 shooting, hit a couple of big threes. Mm-hmm. And here's another guy, in the ilk of the Jay Crowder, who just goes out there and does his job and, hits some big shots, gets his hands in the passing lane, has a block here every now and again. These are the types of role players that, contending teams have. And certainly if the Celtics want to be a serious contender, they're going to need the Jay Crowders and the Jonas Jerebkos and even the Kelly Olynyks or the RJ Hunters even to be successful. Talk about a little bit about the roles of these guys and how they can be so impactful on a you know successful team that's vying for playoffs and vying for you know top spots in the conference, particularly with a guy like Jerebko with what he could do in his game.
Yeah, I mean Jerebko, I thought the big number for him was he went 3-for-3, you know, from behind the arc, and you know, he struggled mightily earlier this year. I mean, it got to the point where you could just watch, you know, in his release, you know, he didn't think the ball had much chance of going in. But to his credit, he kept plugging with it, and you know, he had a big game down the stretch to try to help pull them back against Detroit the other night, even though they fell short, and he seemed to really kind of get his stroke back then, and it kind of continued on tonight on a night where I think, you know, he kind of, you know, had to, you know, with the injuries, had to expect that he was going to get some minutes. And I don't know whether, you know, that just kind of makes it easier on him, a little bit more relaxed. But, yeah, he had a big game. You know, those 12 points, 4-7 shooting, 3-3 from behind the arc, you know, 1-2 from the line, 7 rebounds. And we know Stevens likes to go to him, you know, both he and Crowder in those small ball lineups where one of those two is playing the four. You know, he feels like the team defends better. The team has more energy when they go that way than when they have the two traditional bigs. And, you know, the question is, you know, how long can you sustain that without getting hurt on the boards too much? Mm-hmm. But again, so, you know, a team like, you know, Minnesota, and particularly when, you know, you're going to be active out there, I think, you know, he helped keep the ball moving, the shooting kind of stretch the defense. And, you know, really that's his role. Come in, you know, give some energy, make it just enough shots to, you know, have the defense respect him and, you know, maybe, you know, create a little bit of havoc and confusion out there with his energy. And, you know, that's his, ultimately his role. You know, I don't think he's the type of guy in a playoff situation, you know, if you get serious hopes of making it beyond the first round where you're going to count on him for, you know, 20 plus minutes a game. But I think as that change of pace, 8 to 10 minutes a game, you know, he can have a big impact on games. And we saw it down the stretch last year as well. And, you know, so they're, you know, I think that's one of Stevens' strengths as a coach, and it matches up nicely with the roster, is you got a, you know, you got a bunch of moving parts. You talk about all those role players, and, you know, while none of them, at least at this point in their career, you look at and say, well, you know, okay, that's a guy, you know, you want to kind of start giving 20 plus minutes to, although I think a guy like Hunter is going to be that down the road. They all bring something to the table, and Stevens is, you know, great at recognizing what their strengths are, putting them in the opportunities in the right positions to succeed, particularly, you know, if it is the game situation that calls for it and it's what the team needs. And so, you know, I think you can see, you know, a guy like Jerebko obviously play that role. I think a guy like Zeller, you know, we've seen that. Mm-hmm. I think a guy like Hunter with his shooting skills can be like that. And, you know, while I think he's had a rough you know, beginning to his rookie season, I think a guy like Terry Rozier by the end of the season could be that type of player too, with the type of defense he can play and, you know, his ability to get into the lane. So I think, you know, Stevens is kind of using this beginning part of the season to kind of just try to get everybody enough run, see what he has, and maybe start to figure out how he can deploy these guys in different ways to different effects at different points in the game and against different opponents, so that as they start to gear into the stretch, you know, he's going to be able to, you know, really kind of maximize, you know, what they get out of this roster that's, you know, limited. But, you know, we saw it last year. I mean, this team can win, you know, certainly 40-plus games and could be in that 45 to 50 win range, you know, barring injury and with a little bit of luck. So, you know, I think those, if that's going to happen, guys like that are going to have to play a key role, not necessarily every night, but when they're called upon, they're going to have to step up and contribute those things that they can do at an NBA level.
Well, we will open up the FanDuel call lines. If anyone decides they want to come in and talk to Rich and I about this game, the number is 347-215-7771. You know, obviously you mentioned, you know, the lack of rebounding and obviously the lack of being able to stop Towns tonight. But the Celtics, obviously, overall, were able to sustain that and get a victory 113-99 tonight. So is this a situation where, you know, Towns and Wiggins kind of get theirs and they were able to stop pretty much everyone else with the lineup they had out there? You know, or is there something to the fact that they were able to win a game like this and win fairly easily, you know, with Sullinger and Amir Johnson out. I mean, we talked about the mm-hmm. contributions that they got from Lee and Zeller, but you know, if they were to say trade Sully in one of these rumored deals, or you know, Amir Johnson ends up going as a you know, an added piece, mm-hmm. And they have to go with a front court that has you know, Zeller and Olenek and Lee in it, you know, what kind of sustained you know, action can we see from the front court of the Celtics without having you know, a banger like Sully who can use his body in the right way down low, or Amir Johnson who uses his length the way that he does. Mm-hmm. Is there anything to be said for the fact of how they played without those two guys in the lineup tonight?
Yeah, I don't want to read too much into any one game, and especially where, you know, I think they won this game kind of offensively. You know, you look at, they did struggle defensively. You know, the flip side of that is they haven't played well defensively over the past couple of games, you know, even when Johnson and Sullinger were in there. But, you know, when this team has performed at its, you know, peak level so far this season, and I know it's still early, you know, it's largely been because of the defense, right? You know, they've generated a lot of offense from their defense. They've been really aggressive, really physical, really kind of swarming defense. And I think, you know, Sullinger and particularly Amir Johnson have been a big part of that. I think having Johnson back there, as well as, you know, Sully, while he's not a traditional rim protector by any stretch of the imagination, he's become really adept at positioning himself defensively and, you know, kind of communicating defensively, which is a big thing that I think fans overlook a lot. And I think both of those skills, you know, among those two guys, has really allowed the guards and the wing players play very aggressively, you know, hounding, you know, the ball handlers, you know, jumping passing lanes. And, you know, I don't know whether those guys being out had the effect of kind of maybe tampering some of that or dampening some of that aggressiveness tonight, because frankly, I didn't see that aggressiveness against Atlanta. I didn't see that, you know, necessarily against Detroit the other night. I think it's been on the wane for a while. But yeah, that would be my concern. If you dealt either of those guys, do you have enough interior defense to make the overall defense work the way it, you know, has when it's been most successful? You know, I don't think this team is currently constituted is going to win a lot of games like they did tonight, you know, largely by virtue of their offense. You know, the ball movement was good tonight, and I think a lot of guys benefited from that. You mentioned, you know, how they seem to share the wealth offensively, and I think a lot of that comes with the ball movement, right? You know, you move the ball, and it's going to end up with the best shot, not necessarily, you know, any particular player. And I think that's what we saw tonight. But I think the challenge is, and we've seen this, we saw it against Cleveland, you know, when you've got an opponent that, you know, is, you know, capable defensively and is well prepared, well coached, you know, they're able to stifle that ball movement a little bit. And unless you have guys that can, you know, either you've got guys who can break down the defense on their own, which, you know, outside of Thomas, they really don't have, or you're generating offense from your defense, which they had been doing earlier in the season, but they haven't lately, you know, you're gonna struggle to score. So I think if this team is going to be a threat in the East, it's going to be because of their defense. And I think if you do make a deal to move either Johnson in particular, or even Sullinger, I think you're going to compromise that a little bit, you know, by losing some of that interior defense that in a lot of ways is, while it's not always sexy, is kind of the foundation of the aggressive defense they've been playing.
Well, what do you make of some of these trade rumors, Rich? I know a lot of them are unfounded, but, you know, obviously the DeMarcus Cousins one seems to be, you know, hanging around. You know, we heard Dwight Howard obviously is unhappy in Houston, and maybe something there would happen. But what do you make of some of these rumors just in general? Maybe nothing specific, because we don't know how serious they are or if they're even, you know, if there's any depth to them whatsoever. But just in general, your thoughts on, you know, obviously you mentioned Danny Ainge looking for that big man maybe to be the scorer that he's looking for. Mm-hmm. You know, could it be a DeMarcus Cousins? Could we, you know, could he be rehabilitated, come here? You know, Dwight Howard would be a little bit cheaper than Cousins. You know, would that make sense whatsoever to do that? Because they don't have, they haven't had that big, you know, that big five, that big rim protector, that big scorer in the box Could one of those guys fill that role, and what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, you know, it shouldn't be surprising that there's rumors. I think it's the worst kept secret in the NBA that Danny Ainge has all these assets and he's looking to deal, right? And you know, he's trying to play that property ladder game where, you know, he turns assets, keeps kind of trading up assets by packaging them together, and kind of ends up as he did in 2007, you know, with the big three, and that led to a championship in 2008. So, you know, folks know he's out there trying to make a deal. The question is, you know, what are the deals out there? You know, I've been pretty vocal in saying it's hard to actually kind of pinpoint who's going to become available. You just know that at some point somebody will, right? It always happens, right? And I think we're starting to see it unfold right now with a guy like Howard. You know, Cousins is interesting, you know, because of his issues and because of Sacramento's just dysfunction and struggles. His name is always going to be out there as kind of available but not available. And mm-hmm. So I think that's a situation you always want to monitor. You know, and the Howard thing is a developing thing. You know, I hesitate to call it a rumor. I think a lot of folks kind of ran with a speculation piece that Kevin Pelton and ESPN.com posted last week, talking about what were some trade scenarios for Howard that made sense, you know, from his perspective as an analyst, which, you know, doesn't mean that any of those deals have ever been, you know, discussed in any shape or form. But I think, you know, fans sometimes have a little trouble kind of distinguishing those two situations. So there's a lot of talk about that. You know, my personal feelings, I'd love to see the Celtics get a big man that they can count on as a go-to scorer. Those guys aren't, there aren't a lot of them. You know, Cousins has some skills that you know, point to him being potentially that type of guy. But, you know, I don't know. Does he, as you say, can he be rehabilitated? You know, look, he's, what, in his sixth year in the NBA now, and his team's never won 35 games, I don't believe, right? And, you know, I don't care what kind of talent you are, if it's not, you know, turning into results, and after 6 years in the league and not winning more than 35 games, you know, you kind of have to look and say, well, you know, is this guy, despite all the apparent gifts he's got, is he really that type of player that you can win with, right? And you know, I think that's an open question. You know, sure, I think a lot of Boston fans are like, oh, bring him here, you know, Brad will straighten him out, but you know, he's gone through quite a few coaches right now, and you can, you know, you can criticize his other coaches, but yeah, you know, he had struggles at Kentucky. So, you know, at some point you kind of almost have to wonder, is this who this guy is, you know, and is he worth the headache? As for Howard, part of the reason he wants out of Houston is because, you know, he feels he's being lost in the shuffle. He feels, you know, he should be the top dog. And I don't know that his skill set really warrant that at this point in his career. Especially, he's lost some of his athleticism. He's still a fantastic defensive player, solid rebounder, can score garbage points on the glass. But do you want to spend a season watching him, you know, trying to post up 10 times a game? You know, and I think the problem, and we've seen this with his career now, he's you know, if not 30, he's pushing it at this point. And, you know, how many times has he gone through this? And I don't think you can win with a guy like that as your best player, or even him thinking he's your best player. So, you know, who knows? And, you know, you never know when a player is, you know, that is like a Howard or like a Cousins that's had issues, is going to, you know, have his epiphany, or if he's going to have it at all. And, you know, particularly with big men, you always want to kind of, you know, take that chance. But, you know, the assets the Celtics have are pretty valuable, and I'd hate to squander them on a hope and a prayer like that. And so, you know, we'll see. And I think the other thing for folks to keep in mind with the rumor season is, you know, it always seems to be those deals you didn't hear about that really rock the NBA, you know, on a smaller scale. Who saw the – like, people, you know, saw a Rondo trade coming, but nobody saw Dallas. Right. You know, except some folks, you know, close and, you know, inside the team and close to the organization. So, you know, the deals that, you know, the deals that tend to have the biggest impact sometimes, I think, are the ones that you don't see coming. And so, you know, take the rumors for a grain of salt. You know, there's a ton of information out there. There's even more misinformation out there. You know, you've got guys who've made a living in the media just being kind of the mouthpieces or the purveyors of the misinformation that GMs, you know, want to spread. And so, yeah, take it with a grain of salt. And if something comes to pass, well, then we'll have a blast evaluating it at that point.
Well, I mean, my take on the Howard thing is, you know, you look back to his career and, you know, he stays with the team for a little while and then he gets sick of it and demands a trade and wants out. You know, he did it with Orlando, did it with the Lakers. Now he's doing it with Houston. You know, I would just expect that even if he did get traded here, that it wouldn't be too long before he would want out of here as well.
Mm-hmm.
So with Cousins, I mean, his offensive talent is, you know, is something that would probably fit right into this piece. And I've heard people talk about if you make a trade for DeMarcus Cousins, you know, right away the Celtics become the second best team in the East, you know, without even playing a game, which, you know, obviously there's something to be said for chemistry. And, you know, I wouldn't put him, you know, right there with Cleveland just yet. But, you know, that could be that kind of impact. So definitely weighing the options. Like you said, the assets that Danny Ainge has are very, very valuable. So I want him to be careful with how he utilizes those assets. If you trade for DeMarcus Cousins, I imagine you got several players on your current roster that are going in that, plus the plus the first-round pick. And I would imagine they would be asking for that Nets pick. You know, with any deal that would involve DeMarcus Cousins. So that's something that's seriously going to have to be weighed. You know, is the return going to outweigh what you're giving up to be able to get an impact player like that? So if something could happen at any time now, you know, I said this the last time I hosted the show, you know, we're not necessarily waiting till the end of February here for something to go down. You saw when Rajon Rondo was traded last season, so anything could happen. You know, as some of us call it, it's getting to be the silly season. So we'll keep our eye on those legitimate trade rumors, the Woj bombs, if you will, and then we'll know that something is actually going down.
Yeah, another name that's been out there, and there was a little bit of discussion on social media last week about it, was Marc Gasol. You know, the Grizzlies are sitting. They're in the playoff picture right now in the West, but they're kind of, you know, treading water at 15-14. And there's been talk about them, you know, cleaning house, actually, all the way up to John Hollinger, you know, bringing in a new coach, bringing in a new GM, and, you know, whether they kind of blow it up and start from scratch. And, you know, he's a guy, you know, obviously a little bit older. He's, I believe, 30, 31, you know, certainly older than Cousins. But that's the type of player, you know, assuming you don't give up too much and assuming you don't destroy the chemistry. I think that, you know, deal makes the Celtics a legitimate contender. You know, I think he gives you more defensively than Cousins does. I think obviously he gives you, you know, a little bit, not a little bit, significantly higher basketball IQ, you know, more experience, and, you know, just a more reliable guy. You know, the flip side is the age thing. You know, obviously Cousins has about 5 or 6 years on him. You know, but I don't know. Like, you know, Gasol's got the type of game that I think will age well. You know, he doesn't rely on his athleticism, certainly, where, you know, Cousins isn't in the greatest of shape. And, you know, I could see him, you know, not necessarily aging as well. And that might kind of balance out the age difference. But, you know, that's a situation maybe Celtics fans might want to kind of keep an eye on, is what's happening in Memphis and whether they decide to move on and what that means in terms of the availability of somebody like a Marc Gasol.
I would vote for that one. Let's get Danny on the phone right now, Rich. I'm liking that one. I heard that one too. I didn't put that much stock in it just because of the context that I read it in. I don't think it was necessarily in conjunction with anything to do with the Celtics, but you know, because obviously there was initial talk about them maybe going after him in the off season. But you know, it was pretty clear that Memphis was going to bring him back, and we kind of knew that.
Yep.
Because of Chris Wallace's appearances on Celtics beat, but you know, I would like that move quite a bit, and I know the age thing may get some, you know, 5 or 6 years between him and Cousins is significant, But the asking price may not be as much. You may be able to get away with not giving up the Nets pick if you have enough on your roster to be able to give up and maybe throw in, you know, the Celtics' own pick, or I believe they have the other Dallas first-round pick too, right?
They potentially have.
I can't keep track of them all because some of them have been changing hands. So, you know, maybe they could get away with giving up one of those picks as opposed to the Nets pick, which, you know, should be fairly high in the draft the way it's going right now. And you're getting a player that, like you said, has a much better basketball IQ, giving you, I think, more on the defensive end, and you know, around the hoop is going to give you the offense that you're looking for. So I'd be all for that move.
Now, would you the Dallas pick is top seven protected, so there's a good chance that the Celtics end up getting that. But you mentioned the Nets pick, and they actually, you know, they have the Nets pick technically the next 3 years. They're right to swap next season. So you categorically against, you know, dealing any of those picks? The way I look at it is, you know, the Celtics have three shots at a top pick, mm-hmm. you know, with those, and I'm probably willing to roll the dice on at least one of those, one of those chances at a top pick, you know, if it's in exchange for a, you know, a proven player. You know, I wouldn't give it up lightly, you know, as you said, but I think folks sometimes get focused on the pick they've got this year because it feels so immediate. But outside of Ben Simmons, this might not be the strongest draft. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, how willing Ainge is to deal any of those three Nets pick he's got kind of in his back pocket.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think obviously, you know, the fact that it's so immediate and the fact that the Nets haven't got off to the greatest start, you know, they're 8-20 right now. Although they, you know, have seven more wins than the 76ers right now, you know, only the Lakers have less wins than them. Although New Orleans has eight wins as well. So Lakers 4-23. I mean, that's like just looking at that in the standings, which it seems very off. It seems like it should be flip flop, but you know, obviously
can't say, you know, I'm not enjoying it though.
A little bit. Calvin is not enjoying it. We know that much. But there's just nothing wrong with seeing. I mean, think of how many times. I don't think we've ever seen them with a record like that in what, like the last 30, 35 plus years?
Yeah, there was that. I mean, was that 2005, 2006 or so when they had the tough season and Kobe wanted out. But that's then. And even then, they were just, you know, I think they won 37, 38 games somewhere in there. So yeah, it's going to be a rough season. They're going to struggle to win 25 games. And the Nets won again tonight. And I think Boston fans are maybe finally over, you know, being ready to commit Harry Caray every time the Nets win. And I think folks just need to calm down.
Losing streak.
Yeah, well, and they're still, well, even at 8-20, they're on like a 25 win pace. So you know, Celtics will have a good shot at a top pick. You know, I don't think anybody's going to finish with a worse record than Philadelphia, and you know, as the Clippers will be just in front of them, I guess. But you know, beyond that, I don't see too many teams. You know, you mentioned New Orleans. I expect them to be significantly better than Brooklyn by the time the year's out. And then, you know, beyond that, you know, some of the teams that we thought would maybe be down in that range, like the Knicks, like the Magic, and the Pistons are all doing significantly better than we thought. So, you know, fear not, Celtics fans. I think we'll have, you know, if not the second most, at least the third most ping pong balls going into the lottery if they decide to hold on to the pick.
All right. Well, we are going to have a phone call very soon from the Garden Report's Jared Weiss. Again, he'll be calling in with the Grandstand app, Celtics Locker Room Report. I did see on Twitter as we were talking here, Rich, that that Kevin Garnett did speak to the media after the game. So hopefully either or Jared or Kyle George is producing for us tonight that we're able to get some audio from KG. Because he was asked, obviously, whether or not he feels this will be his last time playing in Boston. So it'll be interesting to see if we get in the audio of that. And I just got a text from Jared that he'll be calling in soon. So as soon as he does call in, we'll go to the FanDuel call lines at 347-215-7771 and get Jared's Grandstand app Celtics Locker Room Report from down at TD Garden. and then we can continue our KG love fest a little bit for the rest of the show. Although I do want to talk about some of the games that the Celtics have coming up as well. Like I said, Jared Weiss will be calling in momentarily here. And speaking of Jared, since he is the host of the Garden Report, CLNS Radio is the best of written, spoken, and watch Boston sports coverage. So for the best of AV, turn to CLNS Radio's YouTube channel, youtube.com/CLNSRadio. You get high-definition locker room interviews, full-length locker room interviews, and the Garden Report, as I alluded to, the HD post-game show shot right on the parquet floor at TD Garden. Subscribe today, youtube.com/CLNSRadio. And as a bonus, you can also see Celtics Beat Unfiltered with Larry H. Russell, which has been quite an interesting episode. I don't know if you've seen the latest episode of it yet, Rich, but it seems Larry was a man about town and asking taxpayers in Boston if they wanted to give up some educational money to get Kevin Durant to Boston. Now, there's a rumor.
Yeah, I've been kind of playfully flying the Durant to Boston flag for a couple of years now, but yeah, I did see Larry's piece there, and actually I just wrote something on clnsradio.com, a little bit more serious than Larry's piece, but talking about the issue of public funding for sports stadiums in particular. We know the one of the big stories in the NFL right now is, of course, the Chargers and Raiders building a stadium out in Los Angeles and thinking of relocating. So Larry asked me in conjunction with his piece to do a little write-up on the issue of public funding of stadiums. And, it turned into a piece somewhat about the Seattle Supersonics, now the Oklahoma City Thunder, and kind of the dynamic, that led to them leaving Seattle and ending up in OKC. So, yeah, Larry does a great job with Celtics Beat Unfiltered. It's always fun to watch.
Well, great to have a column from the great Rich Conte on CLNSRadio.com. So definitely go and check that out. I will be as soon as we're finished with this. I did see that it was posted, but I was watching the game, so I didn't want to distract from being able to talk intelligently about the Celtics game. But definitely something I will be checking out. And if you haven't seen Celtics Beat Unfiltered, go to youtube.com/CLNSRadio and check it out. Episode number 6 is up, with Larry H. Russell and Harris Rubenstein doing a great job covering the Celtics. So a little bit of a unique forum, if you will, since we've only heard Larry on Celtics Beat and throughout the last couple of years. So, but to now actually see him has been quite a treat as well, of course. All right, Jared is going to be calling in momentarily here, so we'll get him right on. He's got a major time crunch, obviously, because everyone wanted to talk to KG, so he's got a lot of work to do to prepare for the Garden Report. So as soon as I see him calling in, we'll go right to him here. But obviously we want to talk about KG and his return to Boston here, the homecoming, but also this 113-99 victory from the Boston Celtics. A very good performance from them tonight at the TD Garden. And they are now 15-13. So after a 3-game losing streak, they come back with their 15th victory of the season. Got quite a number of other teams in the conference that are kind of hanging around that area. You look at, in their division alone, they're a game and a half behind the Raptors. And the Knicks are kind of hanging around at 14 or 15, 3 games behind. And then you look, in the Central with Indiana, Chicago, and Detroit, right around there. And then, in the Southeast, Orlando and Charlotte, and even Washington hanging around there. So, other than Cleveland, which has kind of separated themselves at 18-7, and even Atlanta and Miami with their records, every team is pretty bunched up at the Eastern Conference. I imagine once we get past the first of the year here and some West Coast road trips and things like that, we might see some separation from some of these teams that are bunched up, Rich, hey?
Yeah, I mean, you've got, once you get past the Cavs, you've got four games separating the next 11 teams, you know, from Miami currently sitting in the second slot, which I think just a week ago they were out of the playoffs, and now they're back up in the second seed at 2.5 games behind Cleveland, all the way down to Washington at 12-14. You know, they've underachieved a bit this season, but they're still, you know, only three games out of the eighth spot in the playoffs right now. So it is a long season to go, but it's interesting how the East has kind of improved through the middle of this season. You know, you've got the, you know, beyond the Cavaliers, there's no team that's really separated itself, particularly with Atlanta having taken a bit of a step back from last year, although they've won four straight. So, you know, they may be in the process of kind of getting that ship back on track, and they're only 2.5 games, you know, behind Cleveland. Toronto, kind of same boat. They took a little bit of a step back, but they seem to be playing a little bit better lately. And then you go all the way down, and, you know, you get to the 10th spot, the Celtics sitting at 15-13, still two games above 500, yet two games out of the playoffs. When last year, you know, we were looking at sub-500 teams, you know, filling the seventh and eighth spot in the East. And this is even with Milwaukee really struggling this season. They were kind of a trendy pick to kind of move up into that top four seed in the East before the season started, and they've struggled a bit. They're sitting at 11-18. So long way to go. And, you know, really the only teams that I think are kind of out of the playoff picture in the East right now are Brooklyn and Philadelphia. And really the only team that I think you can look at right now and say, you know, that's, you know, a surefire playoff team in the East is Cleveland. You know, any of the other teams, you know, an injury here or there for any period of time, and they'll drop down. Pacers have been playing better. You know, an interesting thing that I tend to look at, particularly.
Rich, sorry to cut you off here, but yeah. Jared's on with us, so I want to bring him right on. I know he's tough, and we'll get back to the conference talk in a second here. Jared Weiss, brought to you by Grandstand. Grandstand Sports highlights for fans in the stands on the new sports app Grandstand. You could share your own Celtics highlights and watch other fans' videos straight from the crowd. Download the Grandstand on the App Store or at grandstand.me. Jared Weiss, welcome into CLNS Radio Celtics postgame show tonight. I think first and foremost, we want to hear about what KG had to say after this game. He didn't play in this one, but obviously could be his last visit to Boston in his illustrious career.
I mean, does it even matter that he played in this game? All that mattered is what happened at the end. And anyone who
Geno
missed
time.
It, I'm sure you've probably heard by now, and one of the most epic Geno times of all time there for Kevin Garnett. That was a pretty special moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Being that he's in a visiting uniform, the fact that he was looking up and laughing, it got a little emotional there because the crowd obviously was was singing his praises and wanted to, even throughout the game, were chanting his name for him to come in here. But were you able to speak with KG? I know we spoke with the media after the game. I don't know if you had a chance to speak with him or get any thoughts from him as he left this
one. So Kevin was short but very, very sweet. He actually said that when the fans were chanting for him, that he wanted them to stop because he didn't know if Sam Mitchell was going to put him in the game. Because, you know, he wasn't inactive tonight. He was just not being played because of Sam Mitchell's rule for him that he has to be he has to sit out on the tail end of every single back-to-back. So he said that he really wanted them to stop, and he was like, please, please. But it was cool. Like you said, the unconditional appreciation is overwhelming, and he thanks Boston for it.
Now, getting to the game here, Jared, we had some pretty good performances with Solinger and Amir Johnson out. Rich and I talked about this earlier, you know, David Lee and Tyler Zeller stepping up, and obviously Olenek getting the start and contributing. Talk about the front court of the Celtics and how they were able to play tonight, you know, despite the fact that the front court on the other side handled them pretty well.
Well, how about that shake and bake from Kelly Olynyk that knocked Karl Anthony Towns on his butt? That was really surprising there. I asked Olynyk about it. He said it was just like a jab step with a shimmy, and he thought that it was probably just that Karl Towns was the one that fell over rather than him shaking him off.
And how about David Lee and Zeller in their play tonight? They really stepped up when they needed to.
Yeah, Zeller, I want to quote him directly here. Zeller said that he hopes that he can continue to get more comfortable and continue to get more playing time. But he said that with him, I guess time will tell. So he's pretty resigned to the fact that he just never knows exactly what's going to happen when it comes to his rotation spot with Brad Stevens. David Lee didn't talk after the game. He talked before the game. It was a one-question press conference where the question was, his net rating is really bad as far as his defensive performance compared to his offensive performance. The team only has a poor rating like that when he's on the court. So he was asked about it before the game, and he said even when he was averaging 22-12, he still had a terrible advanced statistics. So I guess he said that he's just never going to be able to win on that one. Tonight he had some nice plays. He's still not a reliable player throughout the game. He clearly has lost a step, and you just see that sometimes he takes these shots that are just a complete disaster. And I think he airballed one or two shots in the post tonight. But overall, you look at the end of the night, 13 points and 8 rebounds and 3 assists in 23 minutes. That's a good game. He was solid. He didn't do anything great tonight, but he was solid.
Rich, anything for Jared?
Yeah, Jared, is the team talking all about the kind of the diminished aggressiveness defensively? Sean and I were talking about this game being a little bit kind of an atypical win for them in that they won the game mainly offensively. They shot, I think it was, 57% at the end of the third quarter. We haven't seen that ball hawking defense that we kind of got used to earlier in the season. Has there been any discussion of that, or what's your take as to, is it the league is, I guess, maybe better prepared for them, or has their aggressiveness dropped?
I mean, they were obviously without Marcus Smart in the game. They're going to lose a bit of the kind of tenacity, but I think they've held it up pretty decently so far over the last few weeks. Tonight, I think a lot of it is just the matchup. They had Crowder guarding Andrew Wiggins one-on-one a lot. I think Turner might have gotten a little bit of time on him too. But Wiggins is obviously a really tough cover. He's one of the best penetrators in the league. And Crowder did a decent job on him, but Wiggins still had a really good game. And Zach LaVine had a nice game coming off the bench. But the Wolves aren't the kind of team that I think they can kind of jump passing lanes on as easily, all that kind of stuff. But Isaiah Thomas had 4 steals. RJ Hunter had 3 blocks. There were a lot of perimeter playmakers tonight. I wouldn't say that tonight was atypical of the Celtics. It just wasn't. The Wolves aren't the kind of team. They didn't run the kind of high-paced kind of offense that would be conducive to the Celtics showing off their flair for perimeter pressure like they usually do.
All right, Jared. Well, I know you got to run. You're on a time crunch here. What can we expect from the Garden Report tonight, and of course, some of the interviews that you may have from tonight's game?
Oh, lots of KG. It's a KG night. Tonight's one of those nights where you don't worry about the game as much. You worry about Kevin Garnett. So, I'm gonna have Kevin Coolbaugh from the AP on. We're gonna talk about Kevin Garnett's night here tonight, the legacy year, but we'll also break down some of the game here, especially looking at Tyler Zeller's rare appearance in the rotation, which is it's always interesting when a Brad Stevens guy shows up out of nowhere. Obviously, the two guys in front of him on the depth chart were out, but he did a good job, and then Kelly Olynyk did a good job. I thought he was basically the guy that was responsible for carrying the team tonight.
Well, if this was Kevin Garnett's last appearance in Boston as an NBA player, can you give us your favorite KG moment? You were able to cover him, while he was here for a little while. What's your favorite Kevin Garnett moment from you being able to cover this team over the last few years?
I'd say my favorite moment was actually when he was already gone, and he was with Brooklyn last year, and I asked him a question about the fact that they didn't do Geno time the last time he was here with Brooklyn, and he got really, really emotional and intense all of a sudden. And he just started going. He kind of gets in this KG mode where he's kind of it looks like he's about ready to start charging at somebody. And he's like, I didn't get Geno through my system, and I needed my man Geno and all that kind of stuff. And it was amazing to see that reaction from him. And he doesn't get overwhelmingly positive and excited about many things, but Geno time is probably the one thing that does it for him.
Man, he's got that saved on his phone, and he can break it out anytime he wants, right?
I don't think he does. I think he doesn't because he wants to savor it, actually.
That's a good point. All right, Jared, we'll let you get to it. Thanks so much for joining us tonight, and we'll look forward to catching the Garden Report and, of course, the great KG audio and video on the YouTube channel first thing in the morning.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jared Weiss, live down at the TD Garden. You know, I got to say, talking about favorite KG moments, you know, I was at the TD Garden for his very first game after the trade was made. I spent $80 on a balcony seat with my back up against the wall in TD Garden. I didn't care how much I paid for it because I was seeing Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen and Paul Pierce. And, you know, you just knew walking into the building that night that it was going to be something special. I was there when him and Paul Pierce came back with the Nets after the trade was made the next season. You know, I would love to have been there tonight. It would have been great to send him off, even though he wasn't on the court. But, you know, he is a special guy. I mean, he's had a special career, had one with the Timberwolves before even, you know, set foot on the parquet floor as a Celtic, had a very storied career as one of the best, you know, power forwards in the game, you know, numerous all-star appearances. He got the ring with the Celtics. And, you know, regardless of if this is his last year or not, I mean, obviously a great career from Kevin Garnett. Rich, any, you know, favorite moments of yours from KG's career, maybe just, you know, with the Celtics or you know, even throughout his career, even before or after he was with the Celtics, from Kevin, from you?
Yeah, and the big one for me, and, you know, hate to be a cliche, but when they won the championship, and not so much the celebration afterwards, although that was obviously a very emotional moment for him. It was, you know, if you remember that game six, you know, it was a blowout. Celtics won by 38 points. But while the game was still in contention in the first half, kind of midway through the second quarter, the play that I recall kind of sparking the big run that went and kind of, you know, helped them build, I think it was a 22-point lead by the end of the half, was KG kind of got the ball on a pick and roll, kind of heading down into the key, and Pau Gasol was there kind of going, trying to go straight up and protect the basket. And KG just kind of was not going to be denied. You could tell he was so amped for this game that he literally went through Gasol's chest and did this kind of half dunk, half hook shot at the basket. And just, you know, it was just, you know, they weren't going to be denied that game. And he was the emotional leader. And I think, you know, their performance in that game, you know, it sounds kind of corny, but to me was a direct outpouring of, you know, his emotional state going into that game where, you know, he was so close and he had spent, you know, his whole career kind of toiling away in Minnesota, kind of got, you know, somewhat close going to the conference championship in 2005, I believe it was, or 2004,
yeah.
only to fall short. And, you know, here was his chance to really kind of put all the doubters, you know, to silence them and kind of get that ring more for himself than anybody else. And he wasn't going to be denied. And it was just kind of that the emotion of that moment kind of embodied in that play where, you know, it was just inevitable that they were going to win the title that night. And that's something I'll always remember. And a couple of weeks, you know, they're ending things down. I think there was the story that was related to what we show in the paper about Doc Rivers talking about a practice when KG was supposed to be, you know, resting. I think he was recovering from a knee injury, and he just wouldn't, you know, Doc, you know, made him sit on the sidelines, and he started pantomiming every move that Leon Poe was making on the court, and Doc had to cancel practice
because KG just to rest KG.
Yeah, it's just stuff like that you just kind of just miss the guy, and is crazy and eccentric and you know, maddening as he was sometimes, just, you know, he was an original. And, you know, he was, you know, despite having spent so much of his career in Minnesota, he was a Celtic. I mean, he took to the environment here and the culture here like a fish to water. And it was just a beautiful thing to see. And I think he'll always have a special place, obviously, for Boston in his heart. And I hope Celtics fans will always have a place for him in their hearts.
Yeah, and if you remember, I mean, before that Ray Allen deal came down, he wasn't going to come here.
Yep.
That was the rumor anyway. He didn't want to come here. So he embraced it and soaked it all in. Yeah, it's funny because of all the championships that have gone on in the Boston area in the last, you know, 14 years or so. The one that I was out of the area for, I was living in Ohio at the time, living in Cincinnati, was for the Celtics championship. So I was probably one of, you know, only two Celtics fans in the area, because I had a colleague of mine that's from Boston that was out there as well. I'm pretty sure that that everybody in Boston heard me screaming when I ran out of the, out of my townhouse, and maybe screamed as loud as KG screamed anything that's possible that night. But I mean, his career to watch what he did, you know, with the Celtics and what could have been, you know, that season that he got injured with the knee, and obviously with what happened with Perkins in 2010 in the finals. And you know, him and Paul and Ray, they kind of brought back Celtics basketball when it was, you know, when it had been so long since they'd, you know, contended for a championship, and you know, right away they were able to bring one back. So great to have KG be sent off the way that he was tonight, if it was in fact the final time that he'll play, play against the Celtics, play NBA basketball in the TD Garden. So, Rich, before we wrap up here, one last piece of business to take care of. If you need the cheapest tickets to sporting events and concerts, whether it's events or games at Gillette, Fenway, or the Garden, your answer is the Tick IQ app. We love this app because we can search the cheapest tickets for events all across the U.S., and it's so easy to use. You could swipe on all the upcoming games and concerts to receive updates on prices and see your seat before you buy. Head to the App Store and download for free. Simply search Tick IQ. That's TIQ. If you act now, you can use the code BOSTON for 10% off all TN tickets listings. That's use the code BOSTON for 10% off all TN tickets listings. All right, Rich. No callers on the FanDuel call lines waiting for us, so we'll wrap this up for the evening tonight. The Celtics defeat the Minnesota Timberwolves by a score of 113-99. Rich, thank you so much for joining tonight, and always appreciate your insight and great memories of KG, obviously. And we'll be back on is it Wednesday night they play Charlotte?
Let's see, I believe so. Wednesday night, 7 p.m.
And it's at Charlotte, so we will not have a locker room report from Jared Weiss, but we will have the game covered. And some winnable games coming up for the Celtics, so hopefully they can get on a run and go the opposite way of the three-game losing streak that they snapped tonight. But for Rich Conti, this is Sean Backe. Thank you so much for listening to the CLNS Radio Celtics post-game show tonight. We'll catch you Wednesday after the game against the Hornets. Good night.
Good night.